What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to another Pay-Per-View Point post-show edition of the Smart Guy Moment Smack Talk podcast, where we are going to be breaking down, as you can see below, AEW Revolution 2024. Just ended a few minutes ago. Sting's probably still talking. We wouldn't know because the feed cut off, so we're not going to be able to talk about whatever that one was. But as you can see, if you know by now, of course, who we are, but in case you're brand new, I'm Tony Manco, joined as always by Callum Wiggins.
Hello there.
So, I don't know if we're going to hear any more stories. Obviously, we're not checking out the media scrum as we're doing this in the same kind of way. But if anybody in the live chat hears anything interesting about that, let us know. It'll kind of keep us on our toes about that. Of course, take advantage of the super chats as well that are going on right now. If you're listening to this after the fact, or you're listening to it on Amazon Music or Spotify or something, thanks for joining us in any fashion, of course. But leave your comments below while we go through here. Also, keep in mind, head up that Redbubble and TeePublic shop for any of your merchandise stuff. You got Patreon, patreon.com/smartguymoment. You got the little join button over there on the YouTube channel. Click on that. It's the same thing as Patreon. Also, of course, if you are subscribed to this channel, then you'll be able to take part in the live chats and stuff, and then you'll get those email alerts set up and everything along those lines. Also, hit that like button. Toss a little spare change all right with the thanks button that's over there. And let's start getting into this. I do see we have Brandon and Dane in the chat. What's up, guys? And I'm going to spoil the vast majority of what I'm going to say here. They put on a really good show with a lot of really good matches that I have almost nothing to say about. It's going to be my recurring theme. But how high on the scale is this performing for you right now, Callum? I am assuming it's very, very high, this pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah, it's about... I don't know if it's the best AEW pay-per-view of all time, but it's definitely in that conversation.
Are there any matches on here that you think are going to be your match of the year?
Maybe Ospreay and Takeshita.
Okay, that was the best match of the night in my mind, too. Of course, we're going to break down everything that happened here, all the matches, everything from start to finish and stuff. So as we do that, join in on the conversation, everybody. Let us know what you're thinking. Agree, disagree, whatever it might be. All that stuff's incredibly welcome. So the 0 hour was a traditional 0 hour. We had a half hour's worth of people talking, and then we had an hour's worth of the actual matches and stuff. Bang Bang Scissor Gang and a 12-man tag that had been added. Did we talk about that on the hot tags, or did that get added afterward? I think it got added after, right?
Afterwards, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I think we all would have gone in that direction anyway. I don't think that was too shocking, but it was Caster, Bowens, Billy Gunn, Austin Gunn, Colton Gunn, and Jay White against the Jeff Jarrett group. So you got Jeff Jarrett, Saddam Singh, Jay Lethal. They had Willie Mack and they had Private Party, and it was a match.
Yeah, it was fine. It was just a opportunity to continue this Bang Bang Scissor Gang angle, and everyone got to pretty much do some stuff in the match, and you have Jay White get the pin as he should. Yeah, as I said, there wasn't really much to it more than that. Just a fun filler match on the show.
Same thing for the women's match that followed that. It was Julia Hart and Sky Blue coming up short against Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale. Again, just a match. It was fine.
Yeah, it was like a... I kind of took it as... It was a 7-minute match. They tried to stretch out to 14 minutes.
I can see that.
And, yeah, I think that they kind of overdid it. But, I mean, it's good to give them some time, especially because there's only one other women's match on the card for this show. So, gave them time. I think the crowd was in and out of this one. They liked it when Willow pounced Sky Blue and then hit her with the Doctor Bomb to get the victory. So yeah, it's good that Statlander and Willow get the victory. It probably means that at least one of them is lined up to take on Julia Hart next for the title.
I would assume, based off of Stat already having lost the belt, it's probably going to be Willow. But mm-hmm. I mean, it could go in either way, and it really wouldn't be like the most. It's not like this sets up Abaddon again or something. You know, I mean, it's probably going to be one of those two in the next title match, and it makes perfect sense. I am curious about one thing. I've just skipped over it. Go back. Jay White was cutting a promo after that match, and he teased that he has like something in store for AEW Big Business. Got any idea what that might be?
Not necessarily, because it doesn't seem like it's in line for like a world title match or another big title match. Because if you any of the other titles, there's nothing he can really win at the moment. Or nothing that I think would make sense for him to win. So yeah, unless that's when like Juice Robinson's coming back, I don't know.
He said basically something along the lines of always being able to remind people who he is. I forget what the direct line was, but something implying like, at least I took it this way, the idea being, well, I might be off fun and games right now, but come Big Business, I'm going to be a bastard again. Maybe I took that the completely different way.
But I think it just means he's going to have probably a singles match for Big Business.
Maybe Okada?
No, because he would lose that match. So.
True.
Yeah. So I assume he's going to win a singles match against someone in the mid-card.
So yeah, I have nothing. Oh, go ahead.
One other thing from the buy-in show is that there was a vignette about Pac coming back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot to write that down. He immediately has jumped to the front of the line for potential new international, or not international, Continental Crown champions for me.
He could definitely be the guy that takes it off of Kingston. I think he could also be the guy that takes it off of Roddy, depending on how long Roddy holds that title for. Spoiler True. Alert for later on the show.
Yeah, for
But yeah, I think that, it's just good to have him back because, again, it's seemed like for a little while that we may not see him for a little while longer or may not have seen him back at all because he's had such problems with injuries over the last year or so.
He didn't say, if I remember correctly, when he's popping back up, right?
Not that I recall. I think it was just
like a season.
He's definitely coming back. We just don't know exactly when.
Yeah. So he could be popping up at Big Business. He could be popping up after the fact. Maybe they're going to have him set up for some kind of a match at the next pay-per-view, which we now know it is AEW Dynasty April 21st at the, I think it's called like the Chaffetz Arena in St. Louis, Missouri. So future pay-per-view that we're going to be doing coverage for, I already added it down to our notes for the lineup for this whole year. It's smack dab in the middle of all the WrestleMania stuff and then all the Backlash stuff that we got going on. So we'll have 1 week in between there in April where we'll be able to do something that's not pay-per-view related. But I got nothing else notes-wise when it comes to the 0 Hour. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, not particularly. I think that it was just your standard affair.
Yeah. First match of the main card was the TNT title match. Christian Cage successfully defending against Daniel Garcia, who the more that the match was going on, the more I was like, all right, Garcia's not going to win. We were talking about this and the predictions ahead of time that it wasn't by any means a foregone conclusion that he would win or anything. So it wasn't the most shocking thing in the world, but I had been holding out at least a little bit of hope that he might, and a couple minutes into this and everything, I'm like, all right, no way. And, you know, as can be expected, Killswitch got involved. Matt Menard tried to help out a little bit. Eventually, Nick Wayne gets involved, and then, you know, the numbers game catches up to him. So, no gold for Garcia still.
No, but the match was very good, though. Mm-hmm. I think it was a good opener to this. To get us going, even though it did have a somewhat screwy finish, well, a very screwy finish with Nick Wayne getting involved and like guillotine him on the top rope, and then Christian hitting the kill switch to get the victory. I like the fact that they've got the jackknife pin over with Daniel Garcia as like a kind of a finishing move for him, because they put that on, and then Christian just grabbing the ropes at the last second was a good way to kick out of that move, because he's basically pinned a lot of people with that move recently. So yeah, it was a nice little opener. Christian retains, so it does seem like they're moving in the direction of the Adam Copeland Christian match for the title, probably some kind of ladder match. But I don't know if this completely rules out a potential rematch for Daniel Garcia either, because he also has gotten screwed out of this title now as well. So maybe this was just to prolong it a little bit before Garcia wins the title instead.
One way or another, I don't think that this is necessarily just like going to switch over to like Cage is now going to be fighting Brian Keefe or something. Yeah.
No, it would be one of those two that wins the title for him. But now they both have a reason to be even more more active in their pursuit of the title.
What was the next thing you were going to say?
Hmm?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, and by the way.
No.
Heard that wrong. thank you, Ashton, for joining the lending a hand side of the YouTube channel membership. Always greatly, greatly appreciated. Thank you for that. The next match, I believe, was Kingston, right? Yeah, it was Eddie Kingston against Brian Danielson, Continental Crown Championship, and also on the line, a handshake, as we had talked before. If Kingston was going to win, then he would get a handshake from Brian Danielson. And this was pretty much exactly as I would expect this match to be, you know, almost like to a T. You had a lot of the spots that happened in a lot of both their matches that you can expect, like, you know, the continue to hit me, I want you to hit me more types of maneuvers and chops and so on and so forth like that. Which, of course, if that's what you are into, like if you like any of the more like hard hitting Danielson and or Kingston matches, this is exactly what is up your alley. So I gotta assume 90% of everybody is just like, you know, major thumbs up on this one. And I would highly doubt that you would hate this match.
Well, no, it was one of the best matches on the show. Admittedly, there are a lot of matches that you could say was one of the best matches on the show, because most of them were great. But yeah, I mean, this was, as you would expect, but that's the great thing about it. And they started off with Kingston like chopping the shit out of Danielson for the most part, but then he chops the ring post and then Danielson starts attacking the right arm. And so that kind of weapon of Kingston with the spinning back fist and the chops aren't as powerful anymore, because he's basically had his arm worked over the entire time. And I thought Kingston's selling of the right arm, so it's basically like a piece of string dangling off his shoulder for the rest of the match, was excellent and consistent throughout. Because literally he tried to hit the spinning back fist multiple times and Danielson pretty much never went down off the spinning back fist. So they kept that consistent. They had Kingston get out of the triangle choke, which beat him in the previous episode of Dynamite. So just continuing a nice little thread between all of their matches they've had recently. And then eventually Kingston is able to pin Danielson off the powerbomb and get to shake the hand afterwards. That was it was just a nice moment. And I was under the impression before going into it that I thought that Danielson was going to win, just because it just seems odd that they're not going to give Danielson a title before he leaves the company. Or retires. I mean, it's not necessarily leaving the company, but he's going to like retire from full-time competition. But realistically, that's just Danielson. Like, that is just like, I pretty much like Tony Khan could like
he could beg create, him to
he could create a title specifically. This is the Brian Danielson Championship, and Brian Danielson say, okay, I'm going to put this guy over for it.
Yeah,
and so he's essentially using his last year and his last few months to put people over and just have the most fun matches that he possibly can have. And that involves like not just losing against Kingston, but demonstrating that he has respect for him, which in many ways is like almost more important than winning the title in the first place. I saw on Twitter they put out a promo package of Kingston and Danielson getting treatment in the doctor's room, and Kingston just getting emotional about how it was great of Danielson to show him that respect. And then Danielson cuts a really great promo talking about how great Kingston is. So that feud is like there's a line drawn under that now, so now Kingston can move on to whether it's next, whether that is Pac or whether that is someone else for the title. We now know that, like, Danielson missed his opportunity, so it's time for someone else to step up.
It'll and I would assume Pac could be in the running for that, but you know, it's not like Pac's promo was like, and I'm going after the Continental Crown Championship for whoever wins later on tonight or anything that would be like, okay, you know, it's 100% in that direction. Although, you know, I mean, in pro wrestling, 100% doesn't necessarily mean anything. You know, Cody wins the Royal Rumble, points up at Roman Reigns, and then, you know, things happen. And, you know, it's it is what it is. Just as even having a match announced ahead of time doesn't mean that it's not going to be card subject to change, which next match was proof of that. We had the Meat Madness match was supposed to be on here. And instead, we got the All-Star Scramble match. And this, for, you know, rundown quickly of who the people were in it, Brian Cage, Chris Jericho, Hook, Lance Archer, Powerhouse Hobbs, Wardlow, Magnus, and Dante Martin. This was my least favorite match of the night. I normally would like to see all these guys go up against each other. Magnus, I'm not familiar with, but, you know, everybody else I like to varying degrees. And I just didn't care for it, really. They had, like, the Meat Madness moment in there where they were just kind of doing the pizza strength and stuff and wasn't really doing too much for me. Funny enough, the Big Man Buffet guy wasn't really into it. And then they had the mini Meat Madness moment thing with the smaller guys and all. But then I started to just kind of get more distracted by how often Dante Martin was just barely not botching. Like, he was flying around the ring, and I was like, he needs to take a moment because he's going to end up getting himself hurt. He was just slipping and slipping all the ropes, and there were a lot of moments around, like, I guess the midway point of this match where people just kind of seemed to, like, stop what they were doing and look around at each other as, like, are you doing the spot next, or is that okay, 1, 2, 3, now we do that next move kind of a thing. So it completely took me out of it. By the next thing I knew, Wardlow had won, and I was just like, oh, okay, that's it. This is not doing it for me, really. How would you feel?
Oh, it was fine. I mean, I agree with you that I think that Dante Martin was way too overexcited and was moving way too quickly. And so that meant that he was ended up either botching some spots or not necessarily botching, but having to change what he was doing in mid-move because he even didn't have his right footing or was going a little bit wrong. I mean, I like the spot of, like, the four big guys just clearing the ring to start with and then just hitting each other and the crowd trying meet. So you kind of get your, like, pseudo Meat Madness match within the middle of this bigger match.
It's like impossible meat. It's not quite.
And then, yeah, I think it kind of devolved into a lot of circumstances of just singles match, short singles match. One guy hits another guy with move, then another guy comes in, start another single match between whoever the next guy in. I say it was a flurry of activity, and I think that they did get a little lost or slowed down in places just because it was, like, overly chaotic. But I didn't find it, like, offensive or bad. It certainly wasn't my least favorite match of the night. And I think that, yeah, I think the right person won in the end. And because you are at the end of the day, even though I thought that Jericho had a good chance of winning this one, you are trying to establish the Undisputed Kingdom as something that we should take seriously. And so Wardlow having a match for the title, coming up and winning this match and then having a shot at the title is probably a good way of establishing that.
Depends on where they go with here, because if they just have Wardlow go up against Samoa Joe, spoilers again, and it's just like, say, on an episode of Dynamite, Joe retains and then Wardlow has nothing to do following that, and then he's back to just, I need to powerbomb a bunch of no-name losers, I think that's going to be a mistake then. So, maybe that's their plan for Dynasty, though?
I mean, it could be Wardlow and Joe. I mean, Dynasty's only a month and a half away, so it could be that the main event of that show is Wardlow against Joe, or at least one of the main event matches, Wardlow versus Joe for the title. Mm. Which would be fine. I'd say I don't think Wardlow's going to win, but I presume that Dynasty is when MJF is coming back, so MJF probably just screws Wardlow out of it, and then you have a Wardlow and MJF feud off the back of that.
Could see that. And, like, Dynasty could be where they do some big things or something, but I kind of get at least a little bit of a sense that maybe they would hold off on a few of like the really big things until probably Double or Nothing, which I don't think that they've fully announced yet, if I remember correctly, either, too, about that. I know I double-checked earlier today about the what I had on the let's see, Double or Nothing 2024 on my list, but I didn't have anything. Yeah, I'm still not finding any like true it's happening at this arena on this day for Double or Nothing. So I don't know, maybe they're in a weird spot with that. But yeah, Wardlow winning could be the best case scenario, could be the like a future problem. I think it would have been obviously a weird scenario if it would have been like Magnus winning and then him fighting Joe. I don't think that would have gone over super, super well in the grand scheme. But yeah, not my favorite match of the night for by all means. And I honestly, it took me out a little bit to where the Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong match that followed, I was kind of already sort of like, all right, I'm going to kind of brush my teeth during a little bit of this. So I missed out on like a minute or so of that. But I don't think that I missed out on probably like that was the best match of the night was the first minute of Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong. But they had a good match. And they, you know, it's not at all surprising considering what we said ahead of time. And Strong is great. Cassidy's great. That gut wrench was like the big standout moment for me, which that looked pretty gnarly, and I wouldn't want to take that.
Yeah, I mean, strangely enough, not the craziest turnbuckle spot we got of the night, but I thought that I actually really liked the way that this match was laid out, in that Roderick Strong basically dominated the entire match. Like, took it's not even a case of, oh, he gets the heat for a while and then Cassidy gets a bit of shine back and everything. Like, Roderick Strong took about 90% of this match. Like, absolutely dominated him with backbreakers and suplexes and Cassidy was all taped up from the recent beating that he'd taken. And he does get a little bit at the end. He does manage to hit like an orange punch and beach break. Yeah, but Strong manages to get out of that, and then eventually, pretty much soon after the big beach break, like, he's just getting back up, trying to go with another orange punch, but then he's just hit with the end of Heartache and pinned. So yeah, the ending was a bit out of nowhere, but I think it flew in with it kind of fit into the flow of the match, which was, Roderick Strong was just better on the night, and Orange Cassidy's like injuries caught up to him. He just wasn't able to keep up with Strong's like better conditioning and power in this one. So yeah, you have a new international champion, as most people would have expected going into this one. And yeah, I thought that Strong looked great in particular. So, but then the interesting, potentially even more interesting thing happened afterwards with the return of Kyle O'Reilly.
And O'Reilly pops up. You'd think that he's going to go after them. They hand him a shirt, though, but he gives the shirt back and walks away. And he looks sad when he's doing it. So I assume, of course, that this is going to go into the direction that it normally would be in this, where it's like, you know, hey, I'm supportive of you, but I don't like Taven and Bennett, or, you know, kind of drive a wedge between them in that kind of fashion, but they could go another way. Wouldn't shock me if they end up having a feud and O'Reilly ends up winning that belt. Wouldn't shock me if he ends up coming up short, but that's cool that O'Reilly's back. That's way more important than anything else. It's like, okay, cool. He's probably ready to go. It's been a while, you know?
Well, yeah, as I suffered a serious neck injury. So it's been nearly 2 years since he's been back. So obviously it's great to see him. I'm a huge fan of Kyle O'Reilly as a wrestler, so I'm interested to see him come back and see what he can do. I mean, it's interesting because like last time he was on TV, Roderick Strong hadn't been signed to AEW yet. So this is the first time he's interacting with Strong AEW. Yeah, Strong joined last year. And O'Reilly's been out since 2022.
That's so right. He only had Fish and Cole.
Yeah.
And then Fish ended up either leaving or quitting or being fired or whatever. Then that we still, I don't think you know the full story behind that. And then, and Strong was like waiting and waiting and waiting, and he was doing that stupid thing with the injury in NXT. Yeah. Forgot about that.
So it'll be interesting to see what their kind of dynamic is, and what I guess we'll find out eventually what O'Reilly whispered into Strong's ear about what was going on in this circumstance. It does seem like he's not kind of keen on the idea of the Undisputed Kingdom or what they're doing. It thinks it's kind of like a bastardization. They should just be, Cole, O'Reilly and Strong.
Yeah.
Maybe that's his kind of angle going into it, but then that draws the ire of Taven and Bennett. I could see a situation where, like, Strong kind of teases the idea that he's going to go side with O'Reilly in this, and then they have an impromptu, like, Ring of Honor tag team title match, like Strong and O'Reilly versus Taven and Bennett. But then when before the match even gets started, Strong just turns on O'Reilly, and then you could start the feud off there. I could definitely see a scenario that O'Reilly is the next international champion.
I think a lot of it would probably depend on how long do they want Strong to actually be champion, and how much is O'Reilly cleared, because if he's cleared to compete, he's cleared to compete, but like whether or not he would want to be like popping up as much, or maybe they have to give him like a little bit of a slow start to it or something. But I'd be more down for a feud between O'Reilly and Strong than for them to just be a team and still try to be looking into other people to feud with. Because at this point, I don't really know who necessarily they would be going up against. So it's cool. I mean, it's cool either way, because Kyle O'Reilly's back. So yeah, that's always a good thing.
Oh, just so people are aware as well, AEW on their Twitter profile and other places have put the rest of the footage of Sting talking at the end of Revolution. So
I figure we'd see it on Dynamite or something, but man, we'll talk about that at the end here. FTR versus BCC. Had a good match. I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to say about it. Mox gets a submission on Dax for the win, and yeah, it's a good match.
Yeah, it was, again, really good tag match. Just a kind of evolution of what they had done on Dynamite previously. Ended up going over the 20-minute mark, which I guess makes sense because they didn't manage to get the match finished in 20 minutes on Dynamite, so they had to go a little bit longer. And, yeah, BCC get the victory, which is interesting, but I think a good direction to take, because now we're, as per what we'll talk about in the main events, in a weird state of what's going to happen with the tag team titles. And I think BCC are a good team to take it on moving forward. So having a victory over FTR puts them in a good position to do so. And yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of the wrestling in this match and the kind of like the more sort of like intense brawling between the two sides. Like, it was amazingly that Moxley didn't get any color in this match, but Dax did.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think I had written down, how did I write this in the EWN? Dax is bleeding before Moxley. That's surprising. That's what I wrote on there.
And it was quite like, I would say one side of it was very decisive, the victory, in that both Claudio and Moxley had them both in submission holds at the end of it. So it's pretty much like, even though Dax was the one that tapped out to Moxley, it was pretty much a double submission almost. So, yeah, clearly they've set in stone that the BCC were the better team on this night, and so will be the team most likely challenging for gold moving forward, while FTR have to go back to the drawing board a bit. But yeah, thought it was a really good tag team match.
I see XOY in the chat saying, who are your favorites in AEW? If you had to narrow yourself down to just say a top three, top ahead, not a definitive top rope list, what would be your three favorites in AEW right now?
Ospreay, Hangman Page, and Jamie Hayter.
I thought you were going to go Danielson as one of those.
Danielson's great as well. There's too many great people.
Yeah.
Kingston's high up there as well, and loads of other people up there. Like, but I still go Jamie Hayter.
I'd probably go Orange Cassidy, MJF, and I don't know that that third one. I'd have to look at the roster page. I'll look at the roster page in a second. But any other thoughts on the BCC FTR match?
No, yeah. I'm good on that side of things. But yeah, pretty good tag.
So very, very quick list check on my part, and that didn't really help me too much because there are a couple different people that would be in the mix. But I would say maybe I'd give that third spot to Danielson. Maybe Samojo. Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. Let's see what we got next. We had the AEW Women's World Championship. That's the next match here. Now, this started off, I think, one of the better little kind of nuggets of the night. Deonna Purrazzo had said leading up to this that she wanted not timeless Toni Storm, but she wanted the Toni Storm that is, you know, more of a fighter and, like, you know, the one that she's familiar with, the friend that she used to have and all. And that starts off with the old version of Toni Storm coming out, but it's just Mariah May, and then timeless Toni Storm comes out. I thought that was great. She pulled it off really well.
Yeah, sure.
Not a fan.
But just like, what's the point? It didn't. I would say, like, it's a cool looking visual because Mariah May did pull it off well. I'm not saying that that's bad, but it's just like, it didn't. Was it mind games with Jen Frost?
That's the reason why she lost the matches, because of that intro. She's just thrown all the way off and then never got her wits about her. I got nothing to say about the match.
I mean, I have things to say. It sucked. it was like, you know, it's one of those ones that's like, oh, it's technically a fine match, but nobody cared. Deonna's just bombed on the main roster on the AEW since she's joined, really. Because, and I know Rob's not here to defend her, but Rob has always told us that she's the best women's wrestler working right now. At least one of, if not the best. If that's the case, then women's wrestling sucks. Because it's she's fine. She's totally fine, but she's gotten, there's just something missing. She's got a disconnect.
It's the it factor, I think. Like,
yeah,
she seems like a nice girl. You know, like you said, like, she's a good wrestler and that stuff. But like, I don't find myself engaged in her lack of character. Calling yourself the Virtuosa is the same as having any other kind of nickname, and just being like, I'm synonym of great, and I go out there and I wrestle. Okay, well then, you know, what's the difference between you and Ashley D'Ambois? Where you and Hikaru Shida, you know?
Because, I mean, they start off with more kind of like chain wrestling, but they're both really slow. And it's very, very, like, it's not, I don't know, Tyler Bate versus Pete Dunne, or it's not Angle versus Benoit kind of mat wrestling. It's very, very, like, ponderous, and they have to take like a second or two more to get themselves in the position where other people would be instantly if they, you know, if you were a good mat wrestler, which neither of these two seem to be, even though kind of big part of Deonna's gimmick is that she does a lot of submissions and technical stuff, which she is good at, but yeah, it's just way, way, way too slow. And in so many, there's so many other matches on the show which demonstrated like how, like, some speedy stuff or how to do this kind of offense in a more dynamic and interesting way. And they were just so, I mean, I can say at least with a plus point that this was the least like shenanigans filled Toni Storm match, which is a positive, but that she's traded goofy, wacky, like, heel bullshit for like really boring wrestling. And it's like, if it's one or the other, then I kind of like follow what is a tweet that I saw on from I think a guy called Trevor Dame, who's pretty like big in the wrestling space on Twitter. He basically said, I can sum up my review of Toni Storm versus Deonna Purrazzo as, we need to put that title on Mercedes Moné instantly.
It's going to happen. I mean, it could happen as soon as Dynasty, if they want to just jump the gun super fast, or if they want to like kill some time and wait until Double or Nothing, maybe that's the case. But I'm pretty sure it's just happening like right out of the gate. But yeah, I mean, I hate to like crap on this match because I know a lot of people are going to be like, it's the women's division match. Why are you guys doing that? Or whatever. It's not for that reason. So if anybody wants to do that, it's not just like, oh, hate on the women immediately, they have a handicap or something. But it was just the match, and that's why like I don't say it was my least favorite match of the night. I think that it had less wrong for it than the All-Star Scramble did for me, but I just didn't care. Like, I knew Deonna wasn't going to win. I'm not engaged in the Timeless Toni Storm character. I'm assuming at this point that not only is this just like, okay, it's the end of it, and Deonna just goes back to the, you know, back of the line, and then, let's be perfectly honest, has matches with people, and that's it. You know, it's just kind of like, okay, she'll have a feud with Athena maybe down the line that we could pay more attention to, but probably in the meantime, she's just going to have matches on Collision and stuff, and everybody will be paying more attention to Mercedes, and then, you know, we follow suit with the rest of how this is normally going. It's not giving me the vibe of this being any different from the people that we've seen in the past that have come in, immediately got a title shot, lost, and then fell back. I think she's going to be falling into the same trap.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good possibility of that. I'd say she needs to get more over with the crowd. And I mean, honestly, I could see a situation where she ends up teaming up with Toni Storm in a couple of weeks or months.
Hmm.
Like, that's part of, because she can't get over as a, well, right now, at the very least, she doesn't seem like she can get over as a babyface, so she's going to have to turn heel. And why not, if you're turning heel, align yourself to the person that you were part of this feud with in the first place?
And if they have a connection, instead of it just being like she's suddenly in House of Black or something, where it changes the character up.
Well, I mean, I could see a circumstance where, because we know that the long-term, maybe not the long-term thing with the title involved, but the long-term story for Timeless Toni is with Mariah May.
Mm-hmm.
That's the long-term story. So that would probably necessitate Toni Storm turning babyface again during that, with like Mariah May kind of taking over her role. And then if she's babyface, then she can team up with Deonna again. So eventually we'll see Deonna doing something again, but I think she will be relegated for a little while. I agree with that.
Yeah, so it's to go from this match to the next one was a bit of a jump, I think. Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita. The negative that I have for this is nothing happened. Like, the Kyle Fletcher came out after the match and they just said that they're going to have a match and they're going to continue to have Don Callis go up against, put Will Ospreay up against those people in the Don Callis family. But the positive is Ospreay and Takeshita had that match. And that is my, my current only addition that I have on the match of the year list for AEW.
Yeah, this match absolutely ruled. As you would expect, they just went at each other from the start, like at a million miles an hour. Just from the moment that Ospreay just slapped him across the face, they just said, okay, we're just going for it now. And just did, basically, it was just a showcase of both guys. Obviously, this is Ospreay's first match as an official AEW roster member, so they tried to put like everything that he does together into it. But they also decided, hey, let's just do everything that Takeshita can do as well. And there were some awesome spots in it. Obviously mentioned, or at least alluded to, the brain buster spot in the corner, which just left Ospreay with a giant bruise on his back.
Yeah, looked awful looking.
Pretty painful. Yeah. And then you had the Os Cutter reversed into a Blue Thunder Bomb. It was crazy. Just how much like torque he managed to get on the spin for that as well. Like running knees, hidden blades, doing this sequence of like hitting a a Trent Barrett calls it the crunchy. I don't know if he calls it the same move, Takeshita, but when he drops it on your head from a seating position, then transition it into a German suplex, but Ospreay gets up and just flies it in with a hidden blade. And then he hits the Tiger Driver 91, just dropping him on the back of his head. Hits the hit, pins him with the Hidden Blade, which is interesting that he didn't use the Stormbreaker in this one, just pins him with the Hidden Blade, which is totally fine. The Hidden Blade is the greatest move in pro wrestling right now. But I think that, yeah, I mean, this was just batshit crazy. A signal of what's to come with Will Ospreay in AEW, which is, like, week in, week out, he's going to, if not have the best match on the night, he's going to have one of the best matches on the night.
He's going to fill in the void that Kenny Omega's not there. And yeah, exactly. That Kenny Omega has been beaten up for the past couple of years and, you know, kind of having to take some time off and all.
So yeah, I mean, Ospreay versus Fletcher's coming up next, so we don't know where at the moment it's going with Don Carter's family, but I'm totally fine with them extending it out a little bit. Realistically, if it's going to result in some good matches, then I'm all for it. And I think Takeshita's probably a front runner for the Continental crown as well. I think it's about time that he got some gold around his waist. I don't think you need to necessarily extend the feud between Takeshita and Ospreay. You could just do, knowing how Don Callis operates, or at least from what you've seen in AEW, is that they're probably going to try and stretch this out a bit before the big split between the group. But in the meantime, I could see like Takeshita winning that title by, maybe not necessarily Dynasty, but definitely by Double or Nothing.
Could be.
See him hold that title.
And that could be the type of thing that maybe Kingston ends up having a feud with Pac in the meantime, and that was setting up Pac against him. Again, Pac didn't say anything specific about the Continental Crown, so it could be against anybody. But they could be doing that in the meantime for Dynasty, and then, you know, set up Takeshita for that after the fact. But
I could see Ospreay versus Pac being a match coming up soon as well.
Yeah, you know, that could be a good way for them to kind of just keep the ball rolling.
I believe they've only wrestled once in their careers before, so, which ended in a time limit draw in a UK independent match. So it'd be interesting to see if they go down that route instead, especially because, at least from the last time they did, Pac did anything really in AEW, it was tangentially related to Don Callis' family. Because he was in the
Blood and Guts match, right?
Yeah. So maybe Callis can, if they end up like turning on Will Ospreay, or Ospreay turns on them, then they could maybe recruit Pac to be a guy to help take out Ospreay.
If you had to kind of jump ahead and just assume, you know, that the Will Ospreay thing that we were talking about before, that like, okay, he's going to be kicked out of the group at some point or whatever. When do you think that they're going to finally pull the trigger on that? Because I thought it was going to be happening here, and they just instead were like, hey, let's hug it out.
I'd say before Dynasty, but I couldn't say exactly when. It'll be on episode of Dynamite, I think, before Dynasty. It might even be this upcoming one, because he is facing another member of Don Callis' family. So unless they're playing with the idea of he's just going to fight every member of the Don Callis' family before they eventually turn on him, I think he could be on this next episode.
And then just kind of, like, do you think that they have, like, a good game plan in mind for Ospreay at Dynasty? You think that there's, like, a specific match to set up?
Maybe Hobbs. If it is the turn thing to have them turn on him, then Hobbs is the next guy from the Don Callis family that would be able to step up to him. I think at the moment, I think it's either going to be Ospreay versus Hobbs, or it's Ospreay versus Pac.
I mean, Pac even could be brought in as like a somewhat replacement if they wanted to do that too. So yeah, great match. Go back and check it out if everybody missed Ospreay versus Takeshita. That's, if I would say you should watch two matches that are on this show, it's that and it's the main event. Secondary main event, though, WWE World Championship 3-Way, Samoa Joe, Hangman Adam Page, and Swerve Strickland. Swerve's got some extra dancers for his entrance. That was pretty neat. And it was basically the story of Swerve and Hangman getting in each other's ways, and, you know, in particular, Hangman going out of his way to even beat up referees to try to make sure that he could continue the match, and it bit him on the ass a couple times and stuff, and eventually, he is the one that loses the match anyway. Kukina Clutch takes him out, and Swerve fully 100% babyface mode in this, to the point that he even rejected using a foreign object from Prince Nana. So I could see them following this up with Swerve and Joe in a singles match if they want to do that. Maybe at Dynasty, maybe in the meantime, some other fashion. But I thought it was a good match.
Yeah, if it was a really good match, it told a good story. I think the start off with it of like Hangman and Swerve getting each other's face, and then Joe just basically going, "Oh fuck this," and then just started beating the shit out of both of them. Joe looks lean.
He did, yeah.
He looks quick, and he looks like he's in the best shape that I've seen him in years, which is a testament to the fact that he knows that he's in a world championship position now, and he's trying to recapture some of his best. Obviously, he's at a certain age now where it's going to be unlikely that he can do the same stuff that he was able to do when he was in his like mid to late 20s. But he definitely looks more mobile and he looks more agile than he has in the last couple of years. So that was good to see. He was doing some pretty cool stuff, like diving to the outside, doing the Enziguri in the corner. Eventually, you do get Hangman and Swerve getting involved in a lot of stuff as well. And yeah, the whole most interesting part of the whole story was just Hangman's desperation and taking out the referees to stop Swerve winning every single time. Both of them had pretty much pins on Samoa Joe at one point or another, with Hangman hitting the buckshot lariat and eventually getting a two count because he'd already taken out the referee, so he had to wait for another referee to come down to do it. And I thought he was immediately going to take him out, but he waited a little while before beating the shit out of it was Bryce Remsburg.
It was Turner was the first one, Remsburg was the second one, yeah.
Yeah. And he was just like a crazy person, just hitting people. He was hitting people with titles, which we'd never do before. So yeah, he's just absolutely 100% down the heel path now. And Swerve just demonstrated more babyface traits, even though he's still kind of the same character. When Prince Nana offered him the crown to use as a weapon, he refused to do it. He wanted to win the title the right way. And he nearly got the victory on Joe with the roll-up, but that was when Hangman took the referee out. And then Hangman gets caught in the Kikina clutch. Looks like... It's one of the interesting things about the way that they shot the ending is that I don't know whether it's a case of Hangman just had to tap out because he'd been in the clutch for too long, or he almost like in his mind saw Strickland coming towards him, thought, "I'm going to tap out before he has a chance to break it up and potentially win the match."
So, they were telling that story at least a little bit on the commentary, saying something along the lines of, "Did he tap out to cost Swerve the match?"
So there's still definitely a route they can go through there. I think that Swerve versus Hangman is going into at least Dynasty, if not Double or Nothing. I think there's still a lot of legs in this feud. I don't see Swerve winning the title just yet. Maybe sometime this year. But I think that they are holding off on that. Well, I think Joe's match at Dynasty is probably against Wardlow, so...
Are you still thinking that there's a chance that Swerve beats Joe, or do you think that Swerve wins it from like somebody who beats Joe or somebody who beats the person who beats Joe or something?
I think he could still beat Joe for it. Just depends on how long they want Joe to hold the title for. I think that maybe Double or Nothing would be a potential time to do it, but I think by that time he should still be feuding with Hangman. So then you're looking maybe more All In. And I think that'd be fine. I don't think Ospreay needs to necessarily win the title All In. I think that you could realistically do like Ospreay versus Danielson.
That's what I think, yeah.
At All In, yeah. And then you get that big dream match between those two. Doesn't have to have a title on the line or anything. You just get a big dream match between those two, and then you have Swerve win the title in the main event.
If you're not going to get Danielson against Nigel McGuinness, I think that Ospreay match is the next best thing that you could do.
That would definitely keep everyone happy. You get that great match, and then you also get Swerve winning in the main event. I think that's probably the route that I would envision right now. I think you just need to hold off on Swerve. It definitely wasn't the right time for Swerve to win in this match. Yeah. It really could have only been two outcomes. Joe winning was the best outcome. The other outcome is that Hangman cheats to win, and then Swerve's chasing him for the title instead. But yeah, the I think that this is the right outcome. Joe gets to hold the title for long because he's doing great work as the champion anyway. And yeah, I think Wardlow's probably next up for him, and that allows Joe to work a bit more babyface in that side of the feud.
And kind of put a bow at the end of their feud too, that they had, yeah, you know, back and forth for the TNT title that sucked last year.
Well, I mean, we quite interesting because
the year before was last year. Beginning of last year, but the year before that, partially, right?
Well, yeah, because it was late 2022 when Joe won the title from Wardlow. And then he had that mini feud with Darby Allin, trading the belts between them. And then the start of 2023, I think it was maybe even Revolution that year, Wardlow won the title back from Joe. So, I mean, yeah, I can definitely see a scenario where it's Joe versus Wardlow again. But then it is all quite interesting that if MJF does get involved in that, does he side with Joe, even though Joe was the guy that beat him and teamed up with, well, at least like fed him to the wolves a little bit in the Undisputed Kingdom to do it, and then he allows Joe to win the match, or does he beat both guys up, cause a no contest or something like that? I think either way, MJF's getting involved to screw somebody out of the title in that match.
Yeah, then you can pick it up afterward. You could either do MJF and Joe in a match, or you could do the MJF versus Undisputed Kingdom tour kind of thing, starting off with Wardlow. Or
yeah, I presume that's the case. I kind of want MJF to stay away from the title for at least until next year, probably.
Probably more so. Yeah, I don't think that they're going to be like just giving the title right back to him or anything.
Because
yeah,
he held the title for over a year anyway, so it's like, I think it's not even a case of like MJF fatigue. It's much more of a case of other people need to hold the title at some point. You can't just have it on the same guy unless you're WWE.
And even then, of course, you know, we see how we act about that. So Joe retains title. We're heading into the main event here. The special guest timekeeper for the Tornado Tag match was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Pretty cool. Some other few legends ringside. They had said, I'm blanking on their names now.
Magnum T.A.
Magnum T.A. was the only one I could remember, but
I'm trying to remember because I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think I was like a bit zoned out at that point. So obviously, it's pretty late for me when I'm watching these things, so I was a bit a little zoned out. I know Magnum T.A. was one of them, but I knew that he was already coming there because I saw somebody. I think he'd already said that he was going to be in attendance. Obviously, it wasn't Kevin Nash because you can't do that sort of thing.
He's the WWE guy, you know. You can't have that popping up.
And I will say, I know it's like, this should just be AEW focused and everything like that. Fuck WWE for not giving them any footage of Sting from WCW.
Yeah, I don't see the point in gatekeeping that kind of stuff, because it's like,
just AEW, like, say AEW, okay, pay this much and you get it.
Yeah, like, and
Tony Khan would have paid it.
You only have a license to use it on this pay-per-view. And when you are showing this pay-per-view in perpetuity, when it comes to, like, you know, if you put this on Max, you can show this clip that you're using and whatever, but you can't just keep using the clips. You can't have free reign of all his WCW clips in future episodes of Dynamite. Like, yeah, you put a little clause in there for that, but you're like, okay, if you want clips from WCW, you want clips from whatever the hell other places that they own the libraries for, pay us for it. You can use it in your video package and we could just move the fuck on, because there's no benefit in just keeping it. It, like, they missed out on a payday for something that they lose nothing for.
Well, this is not even the case that they lose nothing for. They gain goodwill.
They gain goodwill and money. Yeah.
And so it just makes them look, yeah, just incredibly petty off the back of it. But to be fair, there's two sides of it. First of all, it's just like, I kind of unexpected that from WWE, because that's just how they operate.
Yeah.
But then also, because like, TNA didn't give anybody some clips either.
I was surprised about that, yeah.
Maybe Sting didn't want any TNA clips. I can understand. I can maybe see that being the case, that he said, I'm okay not having any TNA clips at this.
When I'm watching it, I'm sitting there going, oh, okay, they didn't get any WCW clips here. It's pretty obvious that they're using old clips or using like stuff from New Japan stuff, yeah. Like, you know, whatever. And then I was like, oh, but you know what? They'll probably towards the end here show at least a couple clips of like Joker sting or something kind of thing. Nothing. So it just cut straight to like, well, we could use a couple of these still images from photo shoots around the WCW time frame and all instead. But yeah, I think that the auditorium thing, though, overall, I already have that down as one of my favorite entrances of the year. I thought that was a really cool thing. And
yeah,
for them to end that with like, it's showtime for the last time. And he had his sons come out dressed up as like the full red, white, and blue American flag surface sting and the NWO Wolfpack sting. Yeah. That he got involved in the match. That was pretty cool, too.
I like the fact that I saw someone tweet out that you know which one of Sting's stunt is his favorite because it was the one that wasn't dressed as Wolfpack Sting.
You know, I mean, he could have come out as injured Sting from a Seth Rollins match or something instead.
I would say that Wolfpack Sting, whichever son that was, had the better splashes than the other one. Yeah.
Oh yeah, he did. I was surprised about that, though, in general. Like, I was like, oh, they're actually getting involved. Like, I didn't think that they would.
Well, I think they're both athletes, or at least like past athletes. I think they're both,
like, they said something about, like, playing Division One football or something, which I don't know fuck all what that means, but I've heard it a million times before, so Division One is something. You're not asking the right person if you ask me about, you know, getting into specifics about football and stuff. But this match, it had an immediate start with old Darby Allin just launching himself and, you know, it being Darby Allin, where he wants to be basically a lawn dart. And this also has a note for me for the end of the year awards for best spot of the year and also biggest botch. But the spot on the positive side of things, they brought out these panes of glass, and the first one that they did didn't go well. It was supposed to be, I'm assuming, he goes for the bat swing, and I think it was Jackson, like, moves out of the way, and it was supposed to be like that he smashes the thing, and it didn't break, so then he just smashed it anyway, and I was like, oh, if that's gonna be the big spot, I'm gonna be disappointed. But later on, Darby Allin does a swanton off a ladder that's in the ring. Completely misses everybody, of course, because that's too dangerous to add another person into the mix. But there's the pane of glass on top of four chairs. And he thwacks through that fucking thing. Mm. And immediately afterward, you just start seeing trickles of all the cuts on his back, just a bloody mess. And I'm like, fuck, I would not do any of this shit.
That looks horrible. Because it was just so much blood going, like, his sides. He's climbing Everest soon.
Yeah, like, gonna have what, all like those, 2 weeks from now or something?
Like, yeah, and he's going to have, like, so many stitches in his back after that. It's like they were getting gauze on him, and the doctors were having to, like, tape him up a little bit in places, and just, it was just awful, awful, awful. Hell, but he is literally insane. There can't be any other rationale behind it. He's just an insane human being that he does it for entertainment, at least. Yeah.
As long as he gets up and walks away at the end, you could end up feeling not as guilty. You know, it's kind of like watching Superhuman do the whole whoop whoop kind of thing. But man, they had a couple spots throughout this. You know, of course, people getting thrown through tables. Sting took a table spot, no sold it. Immediately got thrown through a pane of glass as well. Got a two count out of that. But they did a really good job here of Sting being like, "Yo, I'm going to fight back and I'm going to get up. I'm going to fight back and I'm going to get up," and just get the crowd to be like overwhelmingly super into this. And this was a fucking great main event segment. Loved it.
Yeah, it was just total vibes from start to finish, but it was the best kind. I mean, Sting did a lot, as you would expect him to do. He took a suplex off the stage through a table on the outside. Then Darby got beaten up for a while, and that's when he has the pane of glass incident. And it's just basically just Sting versus the Young Bucks for a long time, where they hit the EVP trigger now. And Sting kicks out of that the first time. Then they hit another EVP trigger, and then Sting kicks out at one. Has a double super kick spot where he does the zombie thing where he's like leans back and then moves forward. That was their big spot from the that was their big spot from the match they had at the first of Indoor, and so they just recreated it, and it was super cool again to see that. And then like you have Ricky Dragon Steamboat gets involved, he gets taken out, Ric Flair gets involved. They still like to say, like, okay, we're just gonna let Ric Flair protect Sting, and then they double super kick Flair out of the ring. And I thought that Flair was dead for a little while because he was just laying very still at the side of the ring. So it's like, oh my god, they haven't actually but no, he was fine.
He's like, I'm going out, you can't be all about Sting.
and then it looks like they're like about to finish him off with maybe the no longer the Meltzer driver, it's now the Tony Khan driver. Because they've renamed that, I think, since Meltzer didn't give them the Tag Team of the Year award or something. So.
Yeah, now it's the TK driver, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but then Darby throws Nick off of the top rope, goes for a table, then Matt kicks out of a Scorpion Death drop, but then gets hit with the coffin drop, then is in the Scorpion Death lock, and eventually is just forced to tap out. And yeah, you just have this really feel good ending of Sting and Darby Allin winning, going undefeated their entire run as a tag team, and Sting undefeated in all his entire time in AEW. But the crowd was just absolutely electric throughout this entire thing, and they were so happy to see them win. So yeah, this was, yeah, as a match, it's not as, it wasn't as good as I think both like Ospreay versus Takeshita and Kingston versus Danielson, but just as a experience, it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's not going to be my match of the year, same kind of boat, but like the segment, the vibe, you know, you said it earlier, that's the best way of putting it. Like the whole aura around this, they nailed it.
It might not be match of the year, but it probably is maybe front runner right now for SmackDown moment of the year. If that's all, like the this is something that just I love as a wrestling fan. This is just like, yeah, this was. It made me feel more than the Ospreay, or it made me feel different things for the Ospreay Takeshita match. I still absolutely adore that match, and it would be hard to beat this year for match of the year from an AEW side of things, unless they do it again. In which case, and I do hope they do it again at some point, but then. But this was just gives a real like warm feeling inside watching it all the way through. Just yeah, it was a lot of fun and a great way to end the show.
Would have been even better if they wouldn't have tried to do the speech afterward, and then for it to be like officially. Obviously, it's not the same thing, but I guess as far as officially is concerned. That Sting's last words on his retirement were, hold on a minute, I'm getting queued up, wait, and then like then it just fades to black, and it's like, I know that it's way too complicated to just be like, oh, why didn't they just keep it going, because if they would, then they would just have done that, obviously, but like, man, the timing of that, it's like it couldn't have been another minute or something, just to kind of and then thank you or something. That makes me wish that at least two or three of the other matches could have had like a minute or so shaved off. Cause I think you take a minute, 2 minutes off of a few of those matches earlier and you give that little buffer, nobody would have cared. If you take 1 minute out of the Meat Madness thing, or you take a minute out of Deanna and Storm, it wouldn't have killed the match.
Yeah. I'd say it's not the ideal way of doing it, but as I say, they've tried to do as much damage control as they can now by putting it out on their socials, just so you can hear, you can watch the whole thing now completely free. So yeah, as I say, people will get to see that and get to see the last kind of moments of Sting as a active wrestler. I assume that he'll still pop up from time to time for some nice little guest spots, but yeah, what a great, like, final run for Sting. Just who'd have thought that after the way that match with Rollins and Sting ended, or like back in, what was it, 2017, 2016, something like that? 2018? I don't know. It was 2015 even, I think.
Nah, yeah, it wouldn't 2015, Rollins was doing the whole, he had cashed in and won the title and all.
Yeah, because Sting's last match was against Rollins for the title.
So it would have been late 2015 then?
Yeah.
Maybe? Yeah.
So that was his last match prior to joining AEW. And so just come back, and then what we originally thought was just going to be, oh, he's just going to do the cinematic matches, but then coming back into just doing proper matches and doing crazy dives and through tables and off stages and just being Sting again one last time, and just to carry that on for like 3 years before hanging it up. This is an excellent send off and a great way to celebrate someone who's given so much to the wrestling business, like 40 years of his life to entertaining the fans.
Yeah, it's a much better send off than most people tend to get, even if they are a legend. A lot of people just don't get that match, or they don't get a proper match, and it just happened to be like, all right, the last match
they
you
just
got
hang on
was
too long. Yeah,
yeah, or you know, you pull a Ric Flair, and
But yeah, he ends it on his terms. He ended it in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say this just as a warning to him: don't come back.
Yeah. Now, don't get the temptation and then be, you know, the way that Flair did, the way that Terry Funk did a million different times, or, you know, even like Shawn, you know, Shawn Michaels, like that match at Crown Jewel sucks. And man, it sucks that that's his last match. Like I keep wanting him to come back just to be like, you know, can you offset that one? And, you know,
because I think that. I mean, I'd say Sting still looked like he could do things, and the crowd still cheered, you still got it at the end, but it'd just be a case of, even if you can still probably have more matches, you're probably never going to top this one again.
Yeah.
And so this was the right team to do it with. The Bucks are the perfect tag team to go up against if you're in a last match situation. They sold like hell for him, and they did as so many creative spots and fun moments to make Sting look as great as possible. So yeah, just you ended it against, in many people's eyes, one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
That and they're probably so, close to as well. Like, you know, he's working for the company. I don't know about like their religion, if that matches up and stuff, but they're both, you know, the Young Bucks and Sting are both very religious. So it's like maybe they have a good connection there for, you know.
Well, Sting did say with the match after Forbidden Door said that was the most fun that he's had in a wrestling match for like years and years and years and years. So he clearly has a lot of respect for the Bucks' ability. So I think that knowing that his final match was against, I'd say in many people's eyes, one of the greatest tag teams to have ever done it, is probably like a good way. Hopefully he can look at that and just say, yeah, it's not going to get any better than this, and I can just go back and watch all that stuff and just get that feeling again. But you know, it's always difficult because some people can never escape that rush of being in front of a crowd and doing that stuff. So, but hopefully this is a case of a retirement that stays a retirement,
doesn't just stay a retirement because of horrible reasons, like, you know.
Oh yeah, no, this we want him to stay retired because it's better for his legacy.
Yeah, and
we want his legacy to survive, well, not survive, but like to be as strong as possible, and it doesn't end any stronger than this, really.
Yeah, and hopefully he's fulfilled enough where it's like he doesn't get that urge to just be like, I gotta do another one because this last thing sucked or something, like a lot of other people have. But by all accounts right now, of course, it seems like that is the case, and we're only going to know about that in the future when, you know, push comes to shove. But great ending, minus the whole feed cutting off thing, to a pay-per-view that it wouldn't shock me at all if a lot of people have this as their pay-per-view of the year when it comes to AEW. And I mean,
definitely is right now.
Yeah, it's in the running for pay-per-view of the year. That doesn't have a whole lot of competition in AEW. But
it's gonna have more at least. It's gonna have more competition than it ever has had, because if they are doing 9 pay-per-views a year, that's the most we've ever had. So we'll have to wait and see how many more can top this one. But Revolution historically has always been one of, if not the best, AEW shows of the year, so I'd be surprised.
Yeah, they've had a really good track record the past couple of years of having really good Revolutions.
I mean, I say this often in a lot of AEW shows, not everyone obviously, but a lot of ones. If this isn't the best show of the year, then we've had a really good year for pay-per-views.
Yeah, and of course, if this is the best, it doesn't mean that necessarily it's all downhill from here. It could just be that the other ones are good and they don't match up, or yeah, they don't feel as special in comparison for not having the Sting thing or something. Sting of the thing. Go back to that old joke. But Yeah, it's a pay-per-view that, again, I'm going to repeat. I think that pretty much most of the matches were rock solid, very good. I'm probably not going to remember too much about the specifics other than probably this thing match more than anything else. So I don't think that we're going to get to the end of the year and I'm going to be like, you know, what really sticks in my memory is, Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong, for instance, or something. But we'll see. Yeah, it's only fucking March 4th, so got plenty of time for that. But, of course, whether you are pro this pay-per-view, con this pay-per-view, mixed in the middle, yeah, whatever else you want to talk about, leave your comments below. If you want to head on over to the Discord, we have that up, of course, always for every type of thing, whether it's AEW, ROH, WWE, NXT, the indie stuff, non-wrestling stuff entirely as well, too. You can find that up on there. I mentioned all this marketplace type stuff. Pick up those merchandise options on Redbubble and TeePublic. Hit up the Patreon. Join the YouTube channel membership. If you enjoyed this, make sure you not only hit the like button, but toss a little spare change our way with the thanks button. Or you'll leave a super chat if you're still listening on the live chat. And, of course, also check out the next episodes of everything else we have coming your way. You can find everything by just following us on smartguymama.com. And if you go on over to the link tree at amangotree.com, you can see the links to all the Smart Guy Moment stuff and all the Fanboys Anonymous stuff and anything else that I have underneath my whole collection of things. You can follow me at Tony Mango on most of those different platforms that are out there. Make sure you're also following Gallum.
Yep, you can follow me on Twitter at Wigmeister14. You check out the power rankings every single week over on smartcammoment.com, where I rank the WWE superstars based on their previous week's performance. So you check out the most recent one that went out yesterday over on smartcammoment.com. And you can also check out the Fantasy League over there or at WWEFantasyLeague.com to see how all of our teams are performing, who's picking up points as we head towards WrestleMania, the final stop of our journey, where we will crown either myself or Tony as the winner of the Fantasy League.
You don't think that Rob can get several hundred thousand points or something and come back from a distant third?
Unless we institute some kind of like negative points rule for us as well, maybe. but I think we'll. I think there's always next year for Rob.
Do they have a thing over there? I don't know how much they apply it over here, but I know that at least in like softball for kids and stuff, they have a thing called the mercy rule. Do they have that,
potentially. I don't know. It's not really like an applied thing for any kind of sport I'm aware of.
Yeah, that idea of like, oh, you're beating somebody like, like my sister used to play softball as a kid, and it would be like, it's 22-0 and they're in the fifth inning. It's like, yeah, you're not fucking winning. So we just have like the mercy rule and they just like, let's just end the fucking game. Like, you know? Wonder how long ago would have gotten to the point where Rob would have called out the mercy rule. But we do still have, not only those episodes of Raw and NXT and SmackDown and stuff, but we've got all the pay-per-view stuff coming up soon. We're going to be in a little bit of a stretch now from March until the beginning of April where we're not going to have any other pay-per-view point stuff. But then, of course, we get that WrestleMania week where it ends up just being bang, 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 bang. We end up getting the ROH show happening at the same time as the Hall of Fame ceremony. Next couple hours after that, we've got NXT Stand and Deliver, then Mania Night 1, Mania Night 2. That's going to be a mess. But, of course, we want you guys to join everything along the road to WrestleMania. So stay tuned and make sure that you are checking out Dark Casts. Make sure you're checking out Hot Tags and all the other things coming your way in the meantime. Superstar Score Sting, most likely going to be our next main event. Maybe something changes in the meantime, but if it is, we'll let you know. We'll do that Tuesday, Wednesday. Have that up on the channel in some fashion, and obviously we'll hope to see you there. But this has been another Smart Guy Moment for now, and we are being counted out.